Good afternoon. Welcome to the President of the General Assembly's special interactive briefing with civil society. My name is Afaf Khanja. I am the spokesperson for the President, and I am happy and indeed honored to serve as moderator for today's discussions. Mr. President of the General Assembly, Mr. Deputy Secretary General, distinguished civil society participants, UN officials and the broader UN staff, excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, and those of you watching us and following us online and via the UN webcast, and of course, members of the media, welcome to one and all. This is indeed an opportunity to be inclusive and to engage openly and to listen to one another actively. And so we invite you to engage with us because today is an unprecedented opportunity, as never before has a President of the General Assembly offered this in this quite same fashion. So we look forward to your very strong participation. Our session will begin with a general briefing by the President on the six events he will host throughout the year, which consist of three high-level events and three thematic debates, of which respective concept notes are made available on the President's website under the Setting the Stage tab. The President's briefing will illustrate how the events interface with ongoing processes, namely the meetings of the Open Working Group on Sustainable Development Goals and the Intergovernmental Committee of Experts on Sustainable Development Financing. You will then hear from the Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations, who will make remarks on behalf of the Secretary General. We will then open the floor for a short question and answer on the President's brief and the remarks you will have heard. The general discussion will follow, in which you will have the opportunity to focus your interventions on key issues and elements you would like to see reflected in the framework of the President's events. We would like to highlight that your interventions have the potential to influence the substantive background papers that will be prepared for the six events. I now have the honor of giving the floor to His Excellency, the President of the United Nations General Assembly's 68th session, Mr. John W. Ash.
Deputy Secretary General, distinguished participants of civil society, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon and welcome to this first interactive briefing on the implementation of my theme for the 68th session, the post-2015 development agenda, Setting the Stage. I am particularly pleased that the Deputy Secretary General himself, a former President of the General Assembly and a passionate advocate for broader participation of civil society in the work of the UN, is also here with us today. To you, the members of civil society, let me say that I'm very encouraged to see so many of you here, and I think that this bodes well for what we hope to accomplish before this current GA session ends in September. Time is indeed short, so I hope we can all roll up our proverbial sleeves and work together, because there is a lot to be accomplished. As the 2012 Rio Summit made clear, multi-stakeholder cooperation and participation will be essential to forging any sustainable development pathway, and your contributions to ongoing discussions on any new development agenda will be critical. This was true back in 2005, when I chaired the UN Commission on Sustainable Development, Now, close to 10 years later, I will again say to you what I said to your peers back then. You have an equal voice. You will be heard. The onus is on you to make sure that you engage member states. However, this time, we, and I do mean the collective we need to deliver on a shared post-2015 development agenda. Ladies and gentlemen, on my election as President of the General Assembly last June, I announced my intention to convene several thematic debates and high-level events. One of the high-level events will directly address the contributions of civil society to the post-2015 development agenda. So on this, and I hope on other subsequent occasions, it is fitting, therefore, that we should meet, exchange ideas, and establish a line of communication. Today's briefing also serves as an opportunity to see how we can work together in the coming months, specifically with regard to the debates or events which my office will be convening over the next few months. You and your various organizations are the trusted partners of the United Nations. You support the UN in carrying out its agenda in a variety of fields related to human rights, economic and social development, peace and security, and the environment. You are important contributors to the multilateral system, tasked with ensuring that the marginalized and the vulnerable of this world are not forgotten. As we meet here in this room today, elsewhere, the 8th session of the Open Working Group on Sustainable Development Goals is on the way. It is at a critical juncture, as this is the final session before members begin their negotiations on specific sustainable development goals. That process and the parallel discussions within the Intergovernmental Committee of Experts on Sustainable Development Finance is one that I encourage you to remain engaged in. Members of civil society, I am sure you will agree that the task of addressing the unfinished business of the Millennium Development Goals and transitioning toward a universal post-2015 development agenda is so fundamentally important and far-reaching that it requires the efforts of all stakeholders in government, business, and society. But let us remember that the new global development agenda we seek must go farther and deeper and must not only build on the lessons learned, but also expand the MDGs with a set of clear, concise, measurable, and easy to communicate goals and targets. The new agenda should focus on poverty eradication and eliminating inequalities, particularly for the most marginalized, address critical new and emerging challenges, identify strategic themes and partnerships, consider the appropriate institutions for delivery, and be anchored in human rights. As I see it, there are four critical questions that will inform our setting the stage for the post-2015 development agenda. These questions are: one, how do we mainstream sustainability into all the policies, operations, and interactions of every sector, or government, business, and society? Two, how do we integrate development policies, modalities, and mechanisms to most effectively and equitably address the root and structural causes of poverty? 3, how do we develop a core and concise framework for development that is both universal and yet specific to individual needs? And 4, how do we establish a process that is inclusive, interactive, and dynamic, one that allows all stakeholders to work together to deliver on the outcomes that ensure a sustainable and productive future for all? As president of the 60th session of the General Assembly, I see no greater task or mandate for my term than to support this vital process of getting the framework and content of the post-2015 development agenda right, so that people everywhere can live in dignity and with opportunities in their societies and economies. For that reason, I chose the post-2015 development agenda, setting the stage as the theme for the 60th session, with the intention of convening 3 high-level events and 3 thematic debates, focus on areas that I strongly believe deserve consideration in any agenda we adopt. Let me add, the list was not intended to be exhaustive, and I'm sure you too have ideas about some elements that ought to be part and parcel of any post-2015 development agenda. These are just my ideas, and I'm willing to listen to yours. But let me say a few words about each of these 6 events. The first event, the thematic debate on water, sanitation, and sustainable energy in the post-2015 development agenda, will be held in a little over 2 weeks from now, on the 18th and 19th of February. We all know the statistics, but outside these halls and across our planet, some 783 million live without clean water. 2.5 billion have no adequate sanitation. And 1.4 billion are without access to energy, and their lives have for too long been painfully difficult. Achieving universal access to safe drinking water, basic sanitation, and modern energy services are amongst the greatest multifaceted development challenges confronting our world. In any post-2015 development agenda, we would need to define ways to respond to these challenges in a manner that allows both developed and developing countries to forge endogenous pathways that build resilience, and lead to sustainable development. Our next event will be held on the 6th and 7th of March, and it will be a high-level event on the contributions of women, the young, and civil society to the post-2015 development agenda. The statistics tell us that women and youth have suffered the worst in the global crisis of energy, water, food and fuel, and finance. They are the majority of the uneducated or undereducated, unemployed, underpaid, and most certainly underappreciated, and have few opportunities and little hope. This must be addressed. The marginalization of valuable human resources and members of our global society runs entirely counter to the very concept of sustainability. Our event will address the potential capacities and abilities of women, the young, and you, civil society, to contribute to the post-2015 Sustainable Development Agenda, as well as how all 3 groups can be best included in its outcomes. It will underscore the need for a development process that enables more effective, inclusive, and informed participation of all members of our society. On the 9th and 10th of April, we will hold a thematic debate on the role of partnerships in the implementation of the post-2015 development agenda, jointly organized with the President of the Economic and Social Council. The constructive engagement of all stakeholders is critical to framing and implementing a global development agenda, excuse me, and we can only succeed if all of us are prepared to act in partnership. Strengthening global partnerships for sustainable development will be a catalyst for the international community to advance towards an ambitious and transformative sustainable development agenda beyond 2015. At this debate, we will discuss how to build a renewed sense of commitment and partnership to both leverage new public and private resources, as well as stakeholders' comparative advantage, including in the areas of research, technology, innovation, finance, and human capacity. The thematic debate on ensuring stable and peaceful societies will be held on the 24th and 25th of April. Stability and peace are essential conditions for sustainable development. The desire and right of every human being to live in peace without the sounds and acts of violence and war being a part of daily life is an ideal to which we must all commit ourselves. This thematic debate will explore innovative strategies for achieving stable and peaceful societies and thereby contribute to strengthening national institutions so that they can better respond to the twin challenges of poverty and inequality. On the 20th and 21st of May, we will hold a high-level event entitled Contributions of North-South, South-South, Triangle Cooperation, and ICT for Development to the implementation of the post-2015 development agenda. Technology has become a ubiquitous tool of knowledge, innovation, and development. A world divided by technological haves and the technological have-nots will automatically condemn the have-nots to an unsustainable existence in our modern world. This event will focus on the means of implementation of the post-2015 development agenda, promoting better outcomes from all forms of cooperation and urging immediate implementation of commitments under the Global Partnership for Development. This event will be guided by the notion that South-South and Triangle Cooperation can contribute towards the post-2015 development agenda as a complement to traditional forms of North-South cooperation. This is an important consideration in light of the growing geopolitical importance and wealth of the South. Our final high-level event will be on contributions of human rights and the rule of law in the post-2015 development agenda, and it will be held on the 17th and 18th of June. The main objective of this event is to examine how human rights, including the right to development and the rule of law at the national and international levels, can support an inclusive, people-centered development agenda. Issues of governance, human rights, and the rule of law are pivotal to sustainability and the development agenda. We must build upon lessons learned from the MDGs, including gaps and challenges, and we will examine the resources and capacities needed to foster a universal development approach guided by freedom from want and freedom from fear. Far too often, we do not pause to monitor, evaluate, and renew our successes and failures in order to learn from our errors and better chart the way ahead. Hence, to assess our progress and renew outputs, a stocktaking event will be held in early September. It will pull together the findings from all six events and complement the other processes that are converging at the start of the 69th session in preparation for intergovernmental negotiations. I am sure many of you would want to know if and how I intend to take your comments on board. Let me assure you that I will just do so today. I will not just do so today, but also in the upcoming weeks. My office will consider your inputs as we prepare substantive background notes for each of the six events. My hope is that your inputs will also be reflected in the short action-oriented summaries that will ultimately be communicated to the Open Working Group on Sustainable Development Goals, the Intergovernmental Committee of Experts on Sustainable Development and Finance, and to our Secretary General for consideration in his synthesis report to be issued to the UN General Assembly by the end of 2014. Ladies and gentlemen, like all of you, I am all too aware of the enormous challenges facing our globe. With the 2015 deadline looming, we need to be collectively focused on building momentum for the post-2015 agenda. I am confident that we can all come together around one global sustainable development agenda, with poverty eradication at its center, and with true ownership from both government and non-governmental actors alike. Our common challenge must keep us in communication, our common cause must keep us collaborating, and our commitment must keep us pressing forward to the new development agenda that serves the planet and all its people. Thank you.
Thank you very much, President Ash. I now have the honor and pleasure of giving the floor to the Deputy Secretary General of the United Nations to deliver his remarks on behalf of the Secretary General.
Thank you very much, Madam Moderator, Mr. President, distinguished representatives of civil society, ladies and gentlemen, and dear friends. I thank the President of the General Assembly, Ambassador John Ash, for bringing us together. And it is very good to be with you here, representing the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. With civil society present, I always sense a great dynamism in the UN meeting rooms. Civil society groups are driving progress across the international agenda on peace, on human rights, on inequalities, on the rule of law, on climate change, poverty eradication, sustainable development, and many other issues. We rely also on you for progress and for action on the ground, not least. I thank you for your individual and your collective contributions to the UN. You give concrete meaning and local relevance to our work, and you give hope to many people around the world. And you live up to the UN Charter that I always carry in the pocket, namely that you put in ahead of everything the three first words of the Charter. Exactly. The President helps me to find it, and I don't have to remember it very... we the peoples. Remember, we are here to serve the peoples. We're here to serve the peoples. Even if we are represented by governments, it is the people we are to serve. We are counted in the end by what difference we make on the ground. And we will not make that difference unless we work hand in hand with civil society and other actors who influence realities on the ground. President Ash is leading the General Assembly at a very crucial time. This year, 2015, we are to accelerate progress to reach the MDGs, first of all, next year. And secondly, to prepare the groundwork for a post-2015 agenda, as the President has elaborated upon. And thirdly, to prepare at the same time a legal agreement on climate change, all by the end of next year. And I know that he, as well as the Secretary General, are committed, and our teams, to see progress on all three fronts. You are certainly, Mr. President, setting the stage for our continued work. And I commend you for planning a series of thematic debates that you heard now and high-level events to mobilize the international community and enrich the government's deliberations. General Assembly special event on the MDGs, 25th of September, produced a very good and very clear roadmap for preparing the post-2015 agenda. And elaborating a new development agenda has already benefited from a very inclusive process. And non-government organizations, as you know, the private sector, local authorities, trade unions, academics, and citizens have all been involved in this process. And on the journey to our new development agenda, there are a number of important milestones. The Open Working Group on Sustainable Development Goals will finish its stock-taking work this week. In March, it will start preparing its proposals to be finalized during the summer, as I understand. In September, we expect to receive the report of the Intergovernmental Committee of Experts on the important issue of sustainable development financing. And the Secretary General, for his part, has been asked to bring together, by the end of the year, the full range of contributions into a synthesis report that will serve as input to the intergovernmental process. In 2015, that agenda is to be endorsed after intergovernmental negotiations at a summit-level meeting by leaders from around the world, we hope by September next year. Drawing from inputs from civil society and others, the Secretary General's report of August last year, which we named, hopefully properly, A Life of Dignity for All, which I recommend for reading if you haven't, I hope you do, identified many common ideas in the contributions on the post-2015 vision. And I'm glad you gave it such strength by the decisions you took on the 25th of September, Mr. President. We can already see that the world wants an ambitious yet realistic agenda that applies to all countries, rich and poor. Poverty eradication should be, as the President just said, the central objective. The agenda must also integrate all three dimensions of sustainable development, the economic, the social, and environmental, as was established in Rio, as you know. There is also a need to take into account the importance of institutions and of governance to sustain progress. Clearly, we still have to keep the issues addressed in the present MDGs high on the international agenda. That's why we, Secretary General, is trying to accelerate this process by establishing in April, as you recall, the 1,000-day program, and I, on his behalf, also started the call for action on sanitation, the most lagging of the Millennium Goals, as you may know. At the same time, we should explore emerging themes. Around us a new global landscape, and we need to take into these trends, and we have to think about what the world will look like the period 2015 to 2030. And I think we can use the events and the thematic debates planned by the President to help set the stage for such exploration. And I sense a great deal of commitment and energy around the Open Working Group. I'm confident that positive results will be reached by September 2014. I'm also optimistic about the platforms and practices we have put in place to support the engagement of civil society. And like the President, look forward very much to hearing your views and comments about that. Even before the days of the Rio Earth Summit in 1992, the UN had a strong tradition of working with civil society through major groups. And this trend has been reinforced in recent years. I was, as some of you may know, the first emergency relief coordinator. And at that time, it was considered sensational to bring in civil society into the room. We have made progress. We still have progress to make. You have made your voices heard and heeded, I would say, in the Open Working Group and the Committee on Sustainable Development Financing. And many of you spoke during the General Assembly special event at the plenary and at the round tables. As part of an ongoing global conversation, we have assembled the views of more than 1.7 million people around the world who told the United Nations what world they want to see after 2015. Now we have to intensify this engagement with you, with civil society. Today's briefing, this meeting should be the first of several such meetings in different constellations. At Rio Plus 20, states created also, I would like to recall, within ECOSOC, a high-level political forum on sustainable development that allows governments to hold a dialogue with civil society. Its meeting at the end of June provides another opportunity for this valuable exchange, and I encourage you to participate in meetings of the ECOSOC on sustainable development issues. Given your strong and direct contacts with people around the world, I hope you will keep raising public awareness and undertaking advocacy around our common efforts to shape a development vision for the future. Ladies and gentlemen, we are at a crossroads on our journey to define the future development agenda. I count on you to continue advancing alongside governments every step of the way. You are sources of ideas and inspiration with a great potential of outreach. I see here in the room the envoy, the SG's envoy on youth, Ahmed Al-Andawi, and I think when I see you of the importance of young people, taking advantage of young people's aspirations and dreams, but also knowledge of modern technology to reach out in a way that at least my generation wasn't capable of. So we need to keep that youth perspective, in my view. And apart from this, you are key development partners. You are sometimes agents of change. And I would say, slightly masochistically, that you are very careful watchdogs what goes on in this organization. And you have built an impressive track record in supporting the achievement of the MDGs. And you have a critical role to play in ensuring accountability. And I hope you look beyond the adoption of the new agenda next fall and actively think about how you can ensure that the post-2015 vision is transformed into reality during the period 2015 and 30. As the Secretary General has said, we must strive for a life of dignity for all. A life of dignity is a life in peace, it's a life in development, it's a life with respect of human rights and rule of law. And I'm confident that by joining forces, we can achieve this goal. And I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Secretary General Alicion. To ensure that we hear from as many of you as possible, I have been asked to merge the question and answer segment with the general discussion within the time frame that we've been allowed. So what I'd like to do is to kindly ask you to provide your name and your affiliation before posing your questions. We will take about 3 or 4 questions and interventions at a time and then bring it back here for reactions. And in doing so, I have the pleasure to follow tradition within this community. And I give the first question and or intervention to Ms. Anne Marie Carlson, the chair of the NGO DPI Executive Committee. You have the floor.
Thank you. On behalf of the NGO DPI Executive Committee and the 1,500 NGO organizations associated with it, I'd like to do the following. One, thank you for both providing this opportunity for civil society to be part of this decision-making process, and for the excellent preparatory materials which have been shared. Two, share the fact that the NGO community is working in partnership with DPI to plan an annual conference for NGOs worldwide here at the United Nations from 27 to 29 August, focusing on the post-2015 development agenda, with the plan of exciting and involving many others in our respective communities on its possibilities. We'll be looking forward to sharing more details in the next few months as they are being finalized. And three, on a personal level, as an educator, remind everyone of how education needs to be considered at every step along the way in this important planning, so our youth, adults, senior citizens, everyone can be more involved. And that's really the basis of my question, which is the following. In addition to the Global Education First Initiative, how is the importance of education at all levels being considered and incorporated in these plans as vital for all progress? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else, please, the lady in the front to the right.
Good afternoon. My name is Victoria Forsgate. I work for the youth-led development agency Restless Development, and we're also a member of the major group on children and youth. We very much welcome that the event focuses on the role of youth in the post-2015 agenda. We feel it's essential that the next agenda harnesses the agency of young people, and as the high-level panel report says, that they must be subjects and not objects of development. One of our questions before today was how the inputs from this meeting will be fed directly into the process. So we really welcome the collaboration, you know, with the special envoy on crowdsourcing of youth targets and indicators. But is there, is there a plan to feed that into the General Assembly and other aspects of the Open Working Group? So having heard the briefing today, we're really pleased that the action-oriented summaries will be communicated to the Open Working Group. But we really feel that this needs to be done in a timely way to ensure that these are taken into account during the window of negotiations that are taking place in the lead-up to the General Assembly in September. Our second question is regarding the format and the participation in the event itself. We'd like to know what is the potential for civil society, such as the major groups, to shape the format and the agenda of the event itself. And secondly, will it only be open to high-level representation from civil society too? We think it's really important to ensure that diverse participation, so for example, that it doesn't exclude young people from participating. And we'd like to highlight that, you know, many of our members of the major group on children and youth are often not ECOSOC accredited, so will any special processes be made? And we'd be really interested to work with you on both of these areas to ensure the success of this important opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'll take one more question or intervention and give it to Emil so we have some general equity in the room. Sir, just to the center. Thank you.
Yes. I'm Ed Berry with the Sustainable World Initiative. One of the great challenges that humanity faces in the 21st century is that the scale of human activity on the face of the Earth has grown so large that we are simply overwhelming the planet's natural resource systems. We all wish to proceed with an aggressive and globally inclusive economic development agenda, but how can we proceed with such an agenda when we know that the engines of economic growth must always be fueled with additional natural resources, and that this course of action will put further stress on the planet's already oversubscribed natural systems? We all understand the need for fiscal budgeting. We know it is dangerous to accumulate large fiscal deficits, and we know that it is important to manage our development programs within financial budgetary constraints. By the same token, we must avoid further physical deficits, in other words, overuse of natural resources, and we must manage our development programs within realistic biophysical budgetary constraints. We note that in the six thematic areas that are proposed, all are focused on further human development or the means of implementing these human development aspirations. We are concerned that although this is certainly an admirable agenda for the post-2015 discourse, we may be ignoring the critical question, how can we move forward with an inclusive and aggressive development agenda without causing further harm to the planet and future generations? We'd ask that this question be considered and openly debated as part of the UN post-2015 development discourse. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And your reactions now, Mr. President, Mr. Deputy Secretary General.
Well, thank you, thank you very much for those initial questions, and I hope there'll be others. Let me just take the last point first. As I said in my remarks, the events and debates that I intend to convene were not intended to be exhaustive, and it should also be recognized that the goal here was not to duplicate any ongoing processes that are currently underway. For example, there's an intensive process that will result in what we hope would be, by September, a set of sustainable development goals that will address, I hope, most of those areas that you have identified. And also, there is a parallel process that's looking at the broader question of means of implementation, financing being central to that, that is also ongoing. We have chosen some areas that we think should not be left by the wayside. But the purpose of our event in September is to put everything in the mix to see where we are and where we need to be. So before passing judgment on any of the particular processes that are ongoing, including the one that we will initiate beginning next month, let us wait until we see what we have this September and then make a judgment as to where we need to be. In other words, what are the shortcomings, the so-called gaps, or what are the future challenges? Yes, I agree that education is key, and we hope that it would be part of the debate going forward in all aspects of our work. One of the questions that I get asked frequently for people who know my background is that why didn't I choose climate change as my theme, given that I spent a great deal of time during the negotiations on climate change? And my response to that has always been that we must not forget that as member states, we agreed to set up a process that will, we hope, and the Deputy Secretary General referred to it, will result in a legally binding agreement in 2015. It is true that one can have a discussion here in the General Assembly, but I don't think having such a discussion over a period of time would essentially change the pathway that is on the way in that negotiating process and could indeed muddy the waters there. So I think it's best in that particular instance to leave those negotiations where we said that they ought to be, given that the outcome there is intended to be legally binding. In so doing, though, I note with extreme admiration the initiative taken by the Secretary General to convene heads of state and government this September, September 23rd, to be exact, in which he will call on them to give political guidance to the negotiating process. And I think such initiatives are needed at that level. Anything other than that could be counterproductive. So I just thought I'd better highlight that point. The avenues for participation, I think, are well-defined. But, of course, like anything that has been established, there's always room for improvement. I think we've taken note of some of your suggestions, and our office will work with the appropriate divisions or unit of the UN to see how we can improve so that we have broad-based participation going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Avaf. On education, in the Life of Dignity for All, the report of August that I mentioned, We note, of course, that education is one of the areas where we have seen progress than in most other areas, particularly primary education, and particularly primary education for Africa, and in most in particular for girls. But in the report, we point to certain areas where we need improvement and further progress, first on secondary education, of course, but then also the quality of education and the lifelong learning and tackling inequalities. If I look back at my own country, Sweden, and ask what brought Sweden from one of the poorest countries to one of the most prosperous, I would say three things. We built infrastructure, created jobs by that. We instituted fair and strong education system for all, for free. And we had, thirdly, strong and hopefully honest institutions. So those are the three main factors that build the country. So I would hope and would think that education will be a key part. If you add what the President and I now say, you can feel pretty comfortable. Rightly so. On young people, it comes back all the time, and I'm sure you take note, Ahmed, of this, and we need to really focus on that. I have a huge concern about this horrible problem of youth unemployment in the world. I don't know to what degree we can deal with this. It's not only in our hands. It's a lot of other actors that are needed, but I think we are faced with a huge issue if we don't take very strong and energetic efforts to deal with this problem. If unemployment, or even worse, if youth unemployment becomes systemic and structural, the world is in deep trouble, and we have a common task of really thinking of making life meaningful for next generations. Participation in civil society, the President just answered. On sustainability, I think we are hopefully coming to a stage where the private sector and economic planners more or less realize that growth has to be green growth and sustainable. I think it's not only a question of do the right thing, it's also a question of doing the best thing in the enlightened self-interest. I think finite resources is there, and you realize the waste and the consumerism that is taking very strange forms. And I think I often use this term that you might have heard me say before. You may have plan B in life in a certain number of areas, but there is certainly no planet B. There's no planet B, and we simply have to accept that as a fact. I've been negotiating in a number of conflict areas with parties after war or before the to get ceasefires and so forth. I wish we had a project that we would work with all of us, namely peace with nature. Peace with nature. Although you have to look who is sitting on the side of nature at the negotiation table. I suppose many of you will. So thank you very much.
Thank you so very much, Excellencies. We'll take another round or two. We've got three people here on the left. Please, the First Lady. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Michelle Evans. I represent the International Service for Human Rights, and I was very pleased to hear you say, Mr. President, that you're committed to broad-based participation and open to improvements in the process, because my question and comment is quite specific on accreditation, and in particular the problematic past use of the no objection procedure in GA high-level events. Our concern is that the use of the no objection procedure without procedural safeguards in high-level UN events may enable the politically motivated exclusion of NGOs and subject these legitimate stakeholders to censorship. The President of the General Assembly, we believe, has an instrumental role to play in helping to ensure the full and inclusive participation of civil society in high-level UN events and conferences. And so my question to you is, how you plan to, or if you do plan to, facilitate a more open and transparent accreditation process for non-ECOSOC NGOs in high-level events. And I would just like, in this regard, to, as you were asking for improvements or open to suggestions to look at Section 7 of ECOSOC 1996-31. And although this part of the resolution was drawn up to address the situation of non-ECOSOC accredited NGOs in the era of world conferences, we think it could be potentially applied to GA high-level events. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's go toward the back of the room, if we can. The lady in, I believe it's the pink sweater, please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Becca Asaki. I'm here with the WIRA Commission, but I'm actually going to be speaking on behalf of my colleague here, Jaide Rodriguez, who's the president of a union of cooperatives in Nicaragua, and who wanted to speak, but she only speaks Spanish. And since there isn't translation, she asked me to speak on her behalf. She wanted to mention that she is a farmer, excuse me, and that issues concerning ownership of land, access to markets, and women's participation in decision making and around public administration And she said that she and the other women in the cooperatives have been working towards the MDGs and are actually, because they live in rural areas, have been working on in areas of sustainable development, and wants to remind you that it will be that women in rural areas and grassroots women that will be implementing the sustainable development goals. And so in thinking about the implementation, thinking about working with organized groups of grassroots women, particularly in rural areas.
Thank you very much. Let's take someone to our right. Yes, thank you. To our right, gentleman on the right. Thank you.
Oh, it's not me. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, and to the Deputy Secretary General for your commitments and for bringing us together today. I'm speaking. My name is Chris Dirksen-Hebert. I work for World Vision, and working together with a number of child-focused agencies, Child Fund, Plan, Save the Children, and SOS Children's Villages. We're very pleased and supportive of the increased focus on youth that we've all witnessed over the course of this debate. And we're also very pleased that the event in March is focused on what you have called the young, which we're interpreting to include children and youth. My questions for you today are, how can we move forward to ensure that the critical issues of child rights and development are not merged or lost within the wider discussions on the very important youth agenda? And how do we ensure that the voices of children are heard in this process? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Excellencies, your reactions.
On the question of participation, be it urban or rural, I must confess that even as PGA, there are certain rules and regulations which even I have to follow. But I'm always open to look at any possibilities, any ideas on how we can increase participation, particularly for those who are not accredited through the ECOSOC process. And if you have any particular ideas you wish to share with my office, please, I urge you to do so. And I will take a look at the resolution that you recommend that I look at. In identifying women as a key sector going forward for any new development agenda, I was not impartial to, let me just call them broadly urban as opposed to rural, but I do realize that for the reasons that you gave, we do need to pay particular attention to women in rural areas as well, because of the inbuilt disadvantages that they do face. And so, yes, I hope in the discussions that we will have, that particular aspect would be brought to the fore. On, you're indeed right, and we were very careful when we when we said the young, because even though I've been involved in the UN for a long time, when I said youth, I was immediately corrected that certainly within the UN context, that that had a particular meaning. In fact, I think I was told it's from 18 to 30 or something like that. Something like that. And so I was personally horrified because I think of youth, my kids, my own kids, and they're not 18 as yet, so I guess there's something else. Mm. Yeah. And so we had to correct that, and we consulted very closely with our friends from UNICEF. In fact, one of the senior members of my staff is the former secretary of the UNICEF executive board, and so he's there to keep me on the straight and narrow and assuring that when we say the young, we do cover the entire gamut. And we hope through your participation and those who advocate for the young, they too will participate and we will hear their voices so that those concerns are also included as we go forward.
Well, I can only note the importance of land ownership, market access, and the important role of women for agriculture and for food security. I just came back from Addis Ababa. The summit meeting had, in fact, as a title, Agriculture and Food Security, and women's participation and women's role in all these aspects was a key subject, and it pointed in the direction, in my view, that the member states are really moving in that direction and also seeing the remarkable potential that lies in true empowerment of women in today's world. On the children's rights, it's absolutely essential that we focus on the situation for the child in today's world. I am horrified when I see the figures of child soldiers. I'm horrified when I see children in the role of human trafficking. I'm horrified when I read reports about child abuse. And all these things, and of course illiterate children and neglected children. This is absolutely unacceptable. And I think we need to really, if we are serious about responsibility about the future, see what is happening to the next generation and what role we have as adults. I would say that every adult should be a representative of the child. They don't have the right to vote, unfortunately. Well, probably difficult to arrange, but this means that in some cases they're not taken as seriously as they should. And therefore, we have a responsibility to represent the children. And it was a good reminder. Thank you very much. We need to think about this. And it doesn't have to be just a child choir at the opening of a conference. It has to be us really standing up for the children. I think it's a very good signal that you send there. And the fact that this definition is of such character that you mentioned, Mr. President, is a reminder that we have to think of those from 1 to 18. I represent them.
Thank you so very much. We'd like to now turn to our online community, if you will, our virtual community, also following us and wanting very much to participate. I have two questions, and please note, if I may add, that our Twitter feed for this very special event is hashtag UNPGA68CSO. The first question comes from Mr. Arjun Karki, LDC, Least Developed Country Watch, Least Developed Countries Watch in Nepal. The role of partnerships thematic debate is supposed to discuss MDG number 8. However, reading through the concept note, there is no mention about issues of trade, debt, aid, nor the need to address the needs of LDCs, landlocked developing countries, and small island states. And therefore, the question is, how will these relevant issues be addressed? The second question comes to us from Ms. Jane Nalunga, Southern and Eastern African Trade Information and Negotiations Institute, known as CITINI. The question is, the issue of the structural transformation of poor economies should be debated as it is key to promoting sustainable development. Inclusive economic development, eradicating poverty, and the full realization of all human rights, including the right to development. This transformation entails addressing economic governance at national, regional, and international levels. And therefore, the question here is there room, Excellencies, for making written submissions on such items? Your reactions, Mr. President.
Let me take the last question first. The short answer to that is yes. So I hope the representative Citini is aware of that. And I don't know. I think we said it at the outset. We do welcome submissions, written otherwise, to our office as we prepare the background notes. On the question about MDG 8, just one slight correction. The discussion on the role of partnerships was not specifically geared towards that MDG, but to look at the broader aspects of partnerships going forward in development. But we hope the concerns that that the gentleman raised there will also be included in the discussions. But I just wanted to correct the record that, no, it wasn't geared towards that specific MDG. Or any of the MDGs for that matter. But we're looking at a post-2015 development agenda where we would build on the MDGs. We would, of course, take on board the means to address any of their shortcomings and put in place a much broader framework. And we all know partnerships are important, but we do have to ask the hard question: how do partnerships, or how will partnerships, help us in any post-2015 development agenda? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I just deal then with the question on partnership. I think it is important to bring in these aspects that you brought up here. Trade, debt, you didn't mention, but also technology transfer. This raises actually another issue that I am thinking about very much, and that is how do we make sure that the goals, the targets, whatever we will call them, 2015, how will they really be translated into the reality and also adopted and embraced by other important actors inside governments and outside? I think we need to think, Mr. President, of how we engage with finance ministers, energy ministers, trade ministers. We cannot, of course, have a huge negotiation on all these issues, but of course, I don't think we will be able to achieve those targets and goals unless we have a process where you can play a role, by the way, that this permeates decision-making inside nations, realizing that all these factors belong together. We can't get into the WTO negotiations on trade, but it is a very important factor to bring into our work now that we don't come out with something that is a rhetorically beautiful product, but also something that is translated into action on the ground. Also, when you mention those aspects, you remind us of the importance of the universality of the goals. Every nation should feel that we have a task. They have a responsibility. And that goes not least for in the sustainability sector. So you should really bring in those aspects, but we have to strike a balance there because we probably cannot, and we should not, because we could make the negotiation very, very difficult if we bring in them and thinking that we can solve these issues related to trade, debt, and technology transfer. But they certainly are important that we as catalytic force and you as opinion makers make sure that there is also progress made on those areas. Otherwise, we will have much more difficulty reaching the goals and targets that we set for 2030.
Thank you so very much. We are fortunate enough to have time for maybe one more round, two or three questions. I can't resist. Please go ahead.
Federation on Aging. As you can see, I'm aging. And my question is this. Why has the older population, which is growing by leaps and bounds and will grow even larger as our young people grow older, never been considered a major group? We are a major group. Thank you. I would like to, in addition to posing that question, commend you on the openness and the accessibility that this conference and that the others which you, Mr. President, have laid out. And we intend to be present. We intend to be participants as older people. I've been at the UN now for 22 years as an NGO, and I'm coming up on my 92nd birthday in about 4 or 5 months from now. And I like to think that I have as much vigor and as much strength as some of my younger cohorts. And we intend to be as intergenerationally minded as any younger person, and we are doing that. So please consider us as you go into these deliberations and include us in the operation of the various programs. We can be and we are a resource, not a burden. We become burdensome sometimes, as kids do and as young people do, but basically we are here to help, to serve, to be part of you at all costs. Thank you.
So we'll try to be fair, go to the center, then move to the right, and then we'll conclude from there. Gentlemen, centered of me, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. My name is Brendan Coyne. I represent the international movement ATD Fourth World, which works with families and individuals living in extreme poverty. I would like to ask whether spaces will be provided for individuals, for members from the most marginalized and vulnerable groups, including people living in extreme poverty, to actively participate in the upcoming debates and events, and what action will be taken to create the conditions so that they can participate, including what NGOs, CSO societies here can do to ensure that they can register and access these events. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll go to our right. Gentleman in the blue sweater.
Hi, my name is Christopher Decky. I'm speaking on behalf of the Major Group for Children and Youth. And I just have a quick question in terms of funding. To make this event as inclusive as possible on the 6th and the other events that are happening, will there be any funding for people to actually attend the events, especially young people or others who are maybe unable to pay their own way to get here? So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I think I'm just getting a Twitter feed, so just one moment here. It looks like from World Vision on Twitter at UN, of course, UN PGA events need to, let me do that again. Events need to intentionally include people living in poverty in voices he wants to hear at his events at World Vision.
Representative here.
Okay, World Evangelical Alliance. Oh, here we are. How will the post-2015 agenda include role of religious leaders? Thank you. Now that makes sense. Excellencies, your reactions.
Young lady, when I look at you, there's hope for me and the Deputy Secretary General. That's all I can say. But thank you very much for taking the floor and for pointing out to us the importance of taking the broad view. When we in the PG office say women, it wasn't with a particular age bracket in mind. Although that opens me up to the question, what about men? We leave those alone, you know. They can handle themselves. But all is welcome. All are welcome to participate, irrespective of age. And I think I've met you before. I certainly hope that you do. And for those that you speak for, their voices, too, will be heard. So, yes, I do urge you to participate in the upcoming events, not just the one dealing with women, youth, and civil society, but the others as well, because I think the group of which you speak, we certainly do need to hear their voices. So, yes, I do invite you to attend. On questions of accreditation and funding, I think I better ask those who have those questions to speak to someone on my staff, Ms. Akbar, who is over here to my right, to my left, sorry, sitting between those two gentlemen. And I said, you can ignore the two men. But yeah, Ms. Akbar, so that I don't get in, so I don't say something which is not true. But she knows all the processes involved in the accreditation, and I'm sure she could answer a question for the chap in the blue sweater, who's now standing talking to somebody else, not paying attention to me. I guess he's getting his own funding. Yeah. Chapter.
Amazing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. When I heard your clear voice and your very succinct message, I was thinking of something I read just recently saying that age is a matter of mind. And if you don't mind, it doesn't matter. That was clearly... I'll try to live up to that myself. There was a sort of hint from the president here about my age, so you didn't pick that up, did you? But I did. I think I would answer the question on role of religious leaders. I think in today's world, there is a tremendous responsibility of religious leaders to speak out. We notice the impact, for instance, of Pope Francis' comments on marginalized groups, apropos another question raised here, and poverty, the need for simplicity and modesty. It has had a tremendous impact. I was working for a prime minister once who said that every society should be judged after how it treats its most vulnerable, its poorest, its most oppressed. That's where you put the quality stamp of a society. And I think that message must come out from the faith community. And in today's world, when we see in conflict after conflict, and I'm working with them every day, that religion or ethnic background or sectarian background, tribal background, is used to heat up conflicts. And when those genie gets out of the bottle, then they are almost uncontrollable because it introduces an emotional element which unfortunately often is combined with, consider the in the us and them situation, the them being inferior to the us. And if we do that, we completely lose contact with the basic premise of this organization, namely every human being's equal value. And this is something that I urge and hope all faith leaders now pick up. We see how Syrians don't even talk about themselves now as Syrians. They talk about themselves as Sunni or Alawites or Kurds or Druze or Christians. And in Central African Republic, you have Muslims and Christians fighting each other, and again with this us and them syndrome, putting them in different categories in terms of human qualities. And in Myanmar, you have communal violence based again on nationalist Buddhism and of course Muslim communities. And in many of these cases, they lived side by side without any difficulties earlier until leaders, unfortunately, regretfully, and sadly, exploited those differences and brought them out to the fore. And if we are to reach out and reach public opinion to stop this trend, which is so obvious right now, then the faith leaders must be doing it. Governments has something to do, but compare that to the importance of those who communicate on the same level. So I really hope that all faith leaders now see that dangerous trend and act as soon as possible.
President Ash, Deputy Secretary General Aysson, thank you so very much for your very thoughtful and visionary reactions. This concludes not only our question and answer segment, but of course the general discussions, as both have been merged due to time. We would like to take this opportunity to, first of all, thank you so very much for being here and participating so strongly, but also to encourage you to visit the PGA's website, which also leads you to the first ever Facebook of the President of the General Assembly. The President's website offers stakeholders as yourselves the opportunity to provide substantive inputs ahead of the events through an online form. We are currently collecting inputs for the thematic debate on water, sanitation, and sustainable energy, which will be up for a limited duration. So please do take advantage while it's there. And allow me to underscore as we wrap up that your inputs have the potential to influence the substantive background papers for the six events. And if I may conclude, this special briefing of the President of the General Assembly, I'd like to say, and we would like to very much applaud you for your dedication, your tireless efforts, and your contributions toward developing an inclusive post-2015 development agenda. Congratulations.